Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Hi, folks. I have the pleasure to once again interview Rupert Lowe after his superb victory in Great Yarmouth. Before we begin, I just want to say that I'm a member of Restore Britain. I'm a local organizer in Swindon for Restore Britain. So this is a friendly interview, just letting my biases on the table there. But Rupert, what a great victory.
Well, Carl, firstly, let me say what a pleasure it is to be back at Lotus Eaters. I was a bit disappointed when I asked everybody outside whether they were causing enough trouble, and they didn't seem to give me a very definitive answer. But
we're very good boys. I don't know why you would think that.
It's very good to be here. After, as you say, I think a historic win in Great Yarmouth, for Great Yarmouth First. Mm. And what we've done, I think, and we should give credit, first of all, to the people in Great Yarmouth, the voters, who believe in what we're doing. They're fantastic people. We had to go east to find real people. They supported what we're doing. Mm. They can see what we're doing. We asked 9 people who've been in business, who've been in other professions, who've actually contributed to their local community, all from Great Yarmouth, and they were from outside politics. So the model has been proved now in Great Yarmouth. And these 9 people, brave, put themselves forward, campaigned along with us, and we have effectively shown what model locally can work, which we can then roll out nationally. But I should say the most exciting thing for me was that we saw huge numbers of people from all over the country come to help us canvass. So on the Friday, I was blown away. We had 500 people from all over the country. And then on the Thursday of election day, we probably had 400. They'd all traveled to Great Yarmouth. As you know, it's not the easiest place to get to. I had people from Inverness, Aberdeen, somebody driven down from Aberdeen. We had people from Fife, from Glasgow, from Liverpool, Leeds. Always got to have a scouser or two.
You had people from our offices.
From some people of my from your offices. Down. We had people from Devon, from Cornwall, from Sussex, from the Midlands. We had real people, and they feel passionate about what we're doing. So they came and helped us. So it was a team effort. It was real people working with real people. And Great Yarmouth were voting for real people. So I think this is a historic result for Great Yarmouth. We should give Great Yarmouth the credit. They are great people. Because Great Yarmouth First, I think I should say, Great Yarmouth has shown first how it can be done. And so I look, it's really exciting, and it's had virtually no media coverage whatsoever. I mean, to win 10 out of 10 seats, 9 county council seats and a borough council seat, and the 2 stats we should talk about. The first one is the fact the turnout was 60% higher than in the same vote in 2021 or 22, whatever
it was. It was 21, I think it was.
Yeah. So 60% up. So this is people who've not been engaged with politics before. That's the exciting thing. So you could actually halve the vote we got for every candidate and we'd still win.
Yeah. So I wanted to dig into the numbers a little bit because this was particularly fascinating. So, I mean, to begin, I saw arch critics of Restore claiming, and obviously a critic is inclined to minimize numbers, and they had to admit, well, there were probably 350 local activists on the ground. And for a local election, I've never heard of such a thing. That is a huge number. And even if it's somewhere between 350 to 500, what you're estimating, that's an almost absurd number of people canvassing in one constituency.
Because that's
a huge amount of energy
that
has been summoned up and a huge amount of belief that went into it. And then to win by the margins that you won, to get an average turnout of something like 47% across the ward is incredible because, I mean, it's a local election. Normally they have about 30% turnout as they did in 2021, as you say. But then to win by such margins, the average percent of the vote in each of these nine wards was 46%. I mean, it's hard to imagine it was a cavalcade, a complete rout.
But the exciting thing was, as I say, we got the support from everybody, and in time they'll probably have their local elections, and I'm sure, assuming you know other people have got the time, they'll go and help them, and we've proved the model. That's the exciting thing. But the point I always get accused of is, oh, you're going to split the vote. No, we're not splitting the vote. What we're doing is we're bringing people back to politics who've given up on the way in which Britain is governed. And I increasingly find myself looking at Starmer and looking at the Labour front bench and looking at what's happened over the last 20 or 30 years, well, really since Tony Blair. And I think, how have the British people been hoodwinked by this system that basically serves them up a slate of people from parties that they don't respect, they don't like, they don't want to vote for? So these people have actually left voting. And as you know, in the last election, I think the turnout was only 59%. As I call it, Keir Starmer's landslip election victory. That's what it was. Mm. It's wafer thin, actually, if you dig. If 10% shift away from him, he loses most of the seats. In fact, I don't see how Labour can ever survive what's been happening again. I think this is the end of the Labour Party.
I've been saying exactly the same thing. People are saying, well, it's going to be rough. And I was saying, look, this is the last Labour government we're ever going to see. Thank God.
Yeah. I think it is. I think this is the end of the Labour Party. They are a farce. Yeah. I mean, the people in Parliament are a farce. The MPs are a farce.
How could you say that about David Lammy or Rachel Reeves?
Honestly, Carl, I went into Parliament thinking, you know, I've been in business all my life. These people must be able, they must be bright, they must know something. But let me tell you definitively, they know nothing. And these are the people making the decisions. These are the people who are trying to hold the civil service to account. Ministers are supposed to basically decide and advisors advise. But if the ministers don't know what they're deciding about, they can't hold the other people to account. So what our system has done is created this pool, this genetic pool of almost reverse Darwinism, where we have the weakest people making the biggest decisions. And gradually what's happened is the state has accreted power to the extent that it accounts for at least 50% of GDP if you take all the sort of indirect state bodies. And as one of my biggest donors observed, he said, the problem is, and he's a great guy, I said, one, he said, the problem is, and I'm going to quote him, I'm not going to say who he is, but I'm going to quote him because he's brilliant, and he we're sending him the policy, because policy is our next plan. Big policy documents coming out on lots of stuff, because I think we know how to rebuild the country if people believe in what we're doing. But he said, if you spend your own money when you go to a restaurant, you get value. If you spend somebody else's money, you probably get some value, but probably less value than if you're spending your own money. If you've got other people spending other people's money, which is what we have now with the state, you get no value. That's why you get deficient contracts like the Bibby Stockholm contract, which was presided over by Braverman, who was then Home Secretary, and Jenrick, who was, I think, Employment Minister at the time, Immigration Minister at the time. So 1.5 billion given to some abstruse Bradford company. Honestly, Carl, what happens is it's fraud. Fraud creeps in. And what happens is the agents start to take money round the back, and you get the breakdown of a sort of Protestant ethic, which is what's founded Britain. And you get dishonesty on a grand scale. And I actually think that's what's happened in our judiciary, in our police, in our social services, in our NHS. I mean, the NHS is just a fraud. It's a complete fraud.
So
I think people can see it. And what's exciting for me, and this is important, I've said I'll stand till 29. I'm going to give it till 29. So you're building the branch in Swindon, as you just disclosed, which is fantastic. We're seeing reflexively branches jumping up all across the country. And in the same way, Carl, that I didn't go to the count, because that wasn't my result. That was the result of the 9 local councillors. Hmm. And John Whedon also won the borough council by-election. So I actually would love to have been there, because actually being there for the victory is great. But I made a conscious decision. I said, no, if I'm there, everybody will want to talk to me. I don't want that. I want them talking to the people who won the election. I'm already the MP. I helped these people win their election. It's right that they should take the glory because they did a lot of the work and they were helped a lot by volunteers, as you say. Mm-hmm. But what our system and what Blair did this, he created a presidential system. Farage loves it. All of these people, they power accretes to one person. I don't want that. I want to devolve power. And that's what's so exciting about the branches. Mm. I want them to look at what we've done in Great Yarmouth. I want them to replicate it, work as hard, win the local elections, and then we're ready to table a full card of MPs who've got business experience, who are known in their locality, and the branches are a segue into selecting your candidate. And then when we go into the general election, Restore will stand everywhere. And if people don't want that, that's fine. I'm a Democrat. I accept that. But I think they do want it. And I think if we can collectively deliver that formula, we're going to win the election. I've never felt so certain. People think I've gone completely potty.
No, I'm
Reform accused me of having dementia. Maybe they were right. But I think we're going to win.
You know what? I was nervous about the Great Yarmouth elections because, of course, this was the first great test of the system.
I was nervous about the count. We had to watch like hawks.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
But I've heard from people, friends of the show who are on the ground, and they said when they opened up the boxes and you could just see the number, the stacks, and they were like, we've won this. We know we've won it. And then after the first 3 came out, I tweeted out, I was like, oh, my God, you've carried all before you. This has just been a roll. And then they all just kept coming and coming. And that was it. It was just... So tell me about the campaign.
We did that video. Did you see the little clip where we put Farage saying we'd only get... We probably get less than 1%.
I featured it myself.
1%, 1%,
1%. Even in Great Yarmouth.
Even in Great Yarmouth. And then we had, Sheila Oxtoby, the returning officer, reading out every result. Yeah. But look, on my team, we took it very, very cautiously.
Yes.
Because we knew that in Caister... We had a fantastic candidate. We had a fantastic candidate everywhere, but in Caister, we were particularly strong. There were literally Great Yarmouth First Boards everywhere. And it was it's a fantastic place, Caister. It's where I actually, with my son, spent the entire day on election day in 24 talking to the good people of Caister, and we got a fantastic reception. They didn't know me then.
Right.
But we knew that in Caister, Daniel was probably going to get a hell of a vote. But until we knew, until it had been announced, we did not comment on it. Hmm. But once we'd done the clean sweep, we weren't sure if we'd do it. Actually, as I said, you can halve every vote and we'd have still done it.
Yeah.
So that shows you the margin by which we won. Now that's not us scrapping for Tory voters or scrapping for Reform voters or scrapping for Labour voters. I think the majority of those people, and we're going to do some analysis on the data, I think the majority of that is people are coming back to politics.
Very new.
That's the excitement. That is the exciting thing because we, I think, finally want to offer the British people what they should have, which is a true democracy, which is based on real people representing real people. And that's what Great Yarmouth First was.
So can I tell you some of my experience so far organising in Swindon? Because I've had a very interesting experience. First off, the hunger for something like this has been remarkable. I mean, our first meeting was just packed out.
The young too.
Not just young, right? So what's really interesting is it's a complete cross-section of the entire town. We've had young people, we've had sort of people in their early 30s, and then we've had people of sort of my age, and then we've had people of your age. And it's a vast cross-section of the entire thing, like an ice core of the entire town. But a lot of it is mums and dads who are professionals, or maybe they're small business owners, like myself, who are just very concerned about the state of the country. We are very, very concerned, saying, oh, hang on a second, this is not going the way that we thought it was going to go.
Well, look at the borrowing figures today. I've just been, as you know, waiting for sterling to collapse. I mean,
yeah.
Labour, the people don't know what they're doing.
Yes.
They've got this sort of myopic view. Yeah. They've never done anything.
Yeah. But,
you know, and how can you know the consequences of what you're doing? Yeah. All these tax increases, national insurance increases, all the new laws, you know, the workers' rights and you know, these renters' rights acts. Honestly, Carl,
predictable
they
consequences.
Are strangling real Britain. And that's what we've got to cut that Gordian knot. We've got to release the British people. But I know what we need to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Problem is, I have to have a mandate to do it.
But the thing is, I mean, like all of these economic proposals that they're making are all predictable and have been done, and we know what the consequences are. We know, for example, if you they are currently essentially punishing landlords, well, you're going to get a reduction in the number of properties that are available to rent, which is actually not good for people who need to rent properties.
I know people
London
have been kicked out of their houses ahead of this Renters' Rights Act because. Otherwise, you can't get them out. They don't have to pay the rent. Yeah. They can trash your house. I mean, it's just completely illogical.
It has the opposite effect of what they
want. What really irritates me is, you know, I see these people in Parliament. What's happened is the left have been extremely underhand. As you know, the Fabians, we've talked about them before, the sort of, you know, the people who gradually have crept into every part of our society and undermined it through guile, you know, wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah.
So effectively what they've done is they've actually undermined accountability and they've undermined the way in which our democracy works, and they've done it by design. Mm. And what's actually happened is finally, I think, decent people, and this is what's so exciting about what happened in Great Yarmouth, and this is the message I think everybody needs to take away from it, because you're not going to read about it in the newspapers, or you're not going to hear about it on GB News, certainly. You know, that Greek lad who runs GB News seems to have become the Nigel Farage Broadcasting Corporation. Quite why Ofcom haven't intervened yet, I don't know, but I've not said anything to them, but maybe one day they'll wake up. But so, no, it's so exciting. And well, I think people can take heart from this.
Let me tell you something that we've discovered. The first thing is people have got loads of great ideas. So we had the last branch meeting on Sunday, and people were just firing these superb ideas at me.
I know.
And so me and my team were like, yeah, great. Write it all down. We're going to do it all. And we've got a really good WhatsApp group where we're coordinating. But one thing that we've been doing a lot of leafleting. So I've gone through about 30,000 leaflets so far with our activists.
Well, I think we've helped each branch from with some leaflets. Oh, yeah. Are you getting the support you need?
Oh, yeah, we're getting it was actually really strange. I can't remember the chap's name now, but I messaged him saying, we're almost out of leaflets. Can we get some more? And it was
Scott?
It was Scott. Yeah, it was
Scott. It'd be either Scott or Liam.
No, it was Scott. And the next day they arrived and we were, oh, blind, that was quick. But one thing that we've noticed after talking to people in the local area, like, for example, we've been organizing in pubs, as is the traditional English way, right? And we were at one pub the other day. We had about 15 volunteers to go leafleting, which is a superb.
And
this is just in one ward, right? This is just in one ward. We had 15 volunteers to go leafleting. And one of the chaps was like, well, I'm in the pub now. Why don't I just start giving them out? And afterwards, he'd gone around the pub giving out these leaflets. And he came back and said, everyone thought we were the Greens. But what does that tell you? That's the only people these folks have ever seen politically organizing. And they were obviously relieved that we weren't. And there's been a constant refrain from all of these people that they've told us the same thing over and over. We thought it was too late. That's what everyone's been saying.
But Carl, this is what's so exciting, because when I stood for the referendum party, I had the similar thing. Mm. Okay. So you had real people who decided they were going to they believed in something and they were going to work for it. Because that's what we need.
Yes.
We can't do it as a little group of people. I say to my friends, you can't expect me to shoulder a lot of the cost and a lot of the aggro and a lot of the sort of, you know, stress, frankly, of doing this, because you carry a huge burden of responsibility. You've got the media sniping at you every 5 seconds, and I'm expecting another onslaught of media attack.
And the media has been rather
not much left to attack me on, but I'm sure they'll find something. So if they come at me, Carl, tell everybody, shut your ears, because it's not true.
Well,
they're going to get increasingly desperate.
They've been rather hands-off at the moment because they don't want to draw a lot of attention to you. But at some point, you're going to get the Zach Polanski treatment. I mean, I don't know what
they're going to say. Well, I think one or two things will happen. Either that will happen, and I'm expecting that. I've already had an indication.
It absolutely will.
It might be about to start. But the other thing that happens, because I think the media have missed a big trick here, which is what makes me think that Nigel Farage probably is managed opposition. Because what we did in Great Yarmouth, we have put a trail of blood in the water. That's what we've done.
I agree.
And as I said on Dan Wharton's show, in my opinion, Reform are now just warehousing Restore Britain's votes for them.
Yep.
Okay? Now, when there's blood in the water, sooner or later, a shark smells it. Now, why hasn't a shark smelt it already and highlighted the fact that this is arguably the Achilles heel of Reform? Because I think a lot of people find it difficult to believe in Nigel. You've got all this stuff now about, you know, £5 million from Harbour. Well, what's that for? I've never been given £5 million. Nobody's ever offered it to me. And I, frankly, who gives £5 million without some quid pro quo on the other side of it? And then there's these Ben Habib talking about £1 million here to Boris and £1 million there. Who knows? Now, you know, I do think our systems become corrupt. I do think the judiciary is corrupt. As I just said, the police are corrupt. A lot of the lawyers are corrupt. A lot of the barristers are corrupt. I think the whole thing has become a scam. Mm. And the law, by the way, is something which needs to be dealt with. Because we talk about being under the rule of law. I don't think we have the rule of law anymore. We've got the rule of lawyers. Mm. We've got the rule of judges whose judgments are often completely off the wall and illogical. Mm. And that's because the Supreme Court is no longer accountable to Parliament. It's effectively a quango.
Yeah.
And it's become a woke quango. And the judgments on some of these, Pakistani rapists and all this sort of stuff, it's just quite extraordinary. You know, there should be one law for everybody, and it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, what your upbringing is. If you perpetrate a crime, you are punished in an equal way for perpetrating that crime. Mm. And yet you read judges saying, oh, well, he was brought up in a different culture. He wouldn't understand. No. He's broken our law. So,
sorry, can I get back to the campaign?
But honestly, this is so important. And this is why I think people are beginning to see it and respond to it.
I know. I'm really interested in how you did it on like a practical level in Great Yarmouth. Obviously, because I'm interested.
Well, my team was fantastic.
So what was like the daily experience?
Well, as you know, so, and I've urged everybody who's standing in a branch to get their social media up and running.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Great Yarmouth, obviously, we have a big social media footprint. We do now nationally, which is why in some ways I don't care if I don't get covered by the media.
Mm.
Because all that happens is if people want to follow what we're doing, they have to follow us on social media. So our social media just keeps growing, which is great. It's already bigger than most newspapers anyway.
Yeah.
And so I don't mind that, but get the social media working. Get people engaged, to your point. And I was going to tell you about the referendum party. So when we did it, you know, if people really care about something, so if Carl Benjamin says, I'm going to drop Rupert Lowe at Cirencester Station, and then he's going to leaflet the train between Cirencester and so-and-so is going to pick him up from Swindon.
Hmm.
It worked like clockwork. Why? Because people weren't being told what to do. They were working it out at our committee. So I'll do that. Worked. Ran on rails.
Well, that's exactly the experience.
And this is what I hope is going to happen.
Yeah,
and I hope it's going to happen.
Well, no, that's exactly what's happening now.
So get the social media going. You can communicate.
Yeah,
you just talked about WhatsApp groups,
mm.
and actually, it's easier now than it used to be because we've got the digital revolution, which allows us all to communicate much more effectively.
Mm.
It means we don't need to be brainwashed by, big media moguls who are lining their pockets by effectively driving media distribution as they want it driven, not as the truth should drive it. So I think that's the key. Then obviously the enthusiasm, Carl, you'll find will just explode. And that's the, what I call reflexive growth of our branches. And that's what we're seeing every day.
Mm.
And, you know, we've got fantastic people now springing up all over the country. You see them, you know, they're holding up their boards.
Well, they're everywhere.
But I can't get around them all. You know, I'm one man. I've got to fight the beast in Parliament. Mm. The beast is like the Hydra. You cut one head off and about six sprout out behind it. So, you know, we've got to do both. We have to win at local level and we have to then win the general election in 29. Mm. That gives Britain a chance. It's not, I can't guarantee it. And I'm not promising a nirvana. I'm pretty sure that if we then put in the necessary policies, which we're going to produce now, going to produce an economic paper, that's pretty far down the line. I've been working on that with some very able people. We've got a policy document now coming out on net zero and reviving North Sea oil and gas.
Oh, excellent.
What lunacy is Ed Miliband perpetrating on the country? Borders and defence policy. We've got papers coming out on the countryside. I've got papers coming out on the lunacy of overregulation in the city, which has killed our financial markets, the FCA and the PRA, which what came from the FSA and the Financial Services Market Act. That's all got to go. So we're going to produce papers and people are going to read what we're going to do. No other party's doing that.
Mm.
No other party's produced a proper deportation document, a mass deportation document. Not saying we should deport whole communities, which Nigel Farage accused me of. No, it's all set out. Read the document. It's there. It's on our website, on a PDF. We've done one on an Englishman's home at his castle. We've done one on the pubs. We're going to be producing these papers. Student debt's got to be sorted out. We've got coming out on that. VAT got to be sorted out, the VAT threshold. Obviously, the big one is IHT. You know, we're going to get rid of IHT. It's a relatively minor tax in terms of tax collection, but why should the state continue to strengthen itself and weaken the private sector? As I just said, the state is other people spending other people's money, and then it doesn't make any sense.
Mm.
So if people agree with me, let's all get going lawfully, quietly, which is what we've done. We haven't made a lot of noise. Mm. I don't go seeking the media. I often don't even bother to reply to them. But it's interesting, Carl, that they've taken very little interest in something. I mean, to win 10 out of 10 seats on a massive turnout with massive margins, come on.
This is why I wanted to talk to you more about it, because, like, what were you advising the activists on the ground to do? Were you just saying, look, just explain how you feel about things?
It's like with the branches. So what we don't do is we're not prescriptive. You know that. We produced this document. We said, here's your guide.
Yeah.
You know your constituency better than we do. You know the local characters better than we do. Please don't go off-piste. You know, we don't want all this rubbish about
it. Be sensible.
Be sensible.
Yeah.
You know, it's just common sense.
Yeah.
What's happened is we've been dragged far left. And then if you've got common sense, you're accused of being far right. I'm not far right, nor are you. I just like common sense. I want logic. I want things to happen as they should. But we've been dragged by this Fabian nonsense and by all these sort of idiots to the left. And then they look at you and I and they go, oh, he's a far-right extremist. We had a girl, a media team allowed one girl to come and do an interview, right? Mm. I've gone on a name now, she was so insignificant. But again, she couldn't resist saying that we were sort of far-right. We're not far-right, are we? We're the people.
Well, I mean,
are the people far-right? No.
Well, the problem that we have is that maybe from their perspective, that is far-right. That when they say, oh, the people allowed to do the things they want to do and get the results they want to get, well, maybe that is what far right is to these people. And so the idea of like bickering over labels becomes irrelevant. It's like, it just doesn't matter what they say. And I think your particular response to Emily Maitlis is, I don't care. I don't care if
we're going to produce some shirts with the Restore Britain, I don't care on the back.
I really mean
people would wear those?
I would wear them. that's the
three powerful words, Carl. I don't care. And that's what that's the attitude.
It's the only sensible response, because there's no point playing their game and allowing them to puppeteer you and make you dance to their tune. No, I don't care. This is what we're doing. You know, and like I was saying a minute ago, like the response from people is we thought it was too late because they feel locked out of the system.
They have been.
Well, exactly.
And they've been defrauded of their democracy.
Exactly. And the response we're getting has been amazing. We've gone from 350 branch members to well over 400 branch members since we started leafleting. And it's because we have said to people, look, no, this is the party for you. It's not too late, right? It is not too late. But no one is coming to save us. We have to do this ourselves.
That's the message.
Now is the time.
That's the message, Carl.
Now is the time. And
used to say, God looks after those who look after themselves. Mm. And that has got to be our mantra.
And you can feel the sudden response of like, finally, I've got something I can get engaged with. And the response on the ground, I mean, the activists in Swindon have just been amazing, absolutely amazing. Like, I can't believe how frictionless this whole thing has been. Like, I haven't had anyone causing problems. It's not been about egos. It's been mostly sort of middle-aged people, sort of my sort of age, who are like, no, I have to get out and do this. And for example, every week we have our activists coming to the office to pick up more leaflets, which is why we've gone through so many.
Voluntarily, that's what happens.
And we've got plans to do sort of stalls in the deprived areas of Swindon to go down there, and because no one else goes down there. And we're going to go down there and we're just going to stand there and say, like, no, look, you know, come and talk to us. We want to talk to you about the future of your country and how actually you are a citizen. You can vote. You have power here. You don't need to be disenfranchised. We have a voice if we want it.
Carl, these people in Parliament are supposed to be serving the electorate. Mm. That's what they're supposed to be doing. They're not doing it. They're serving themselves. They're serving, you know, big money, big media.
They're serving the system.
And they're serving the system. The system has become a line. It's not good. But I don't know what I've had people ring me up saying, I mean, these are people who've travelled to Great Yarmouth, spent a week in Great Yarmouth of their own money. We didn't pay for it. They did.
Of course.
And they said, I had the best week of my life. I was working with other people. We all had a shared objective. Mm. We've even had people saying, next time I go, I'm going to buy spatulas so that I don't hurt my hands on the letterboxes. You know, so with a spatula, you can get the letter.
Suggestion from us is a spoon.
Spoon, yeah, spatula, yeah, yeah, yeah. Whatever it is. Because I tell you what, in 24, my hand was raw from poking. Yeah, yeah. Some of those doors have got the most horrific sort of bristles on the letterbox.
Yeah.
So look, this is what people are saying. Now, I think, to travel all that way, to spend that money. I mean, first of all, they loved Great Yarmouth.
Yeah.
As it happened, the weather was great. I mean, what did your team say who were there? Did they enjoy it?
Beautiful old English seaside town. I mean, what's
not to
love?
Weather was great. Gorleston Beach looked great. Great Yarmouth Beach looked great. You know, the whole thing, the seagulls were there. You have to watch them because they nick your chips.
Oh, I used to live in Newquay. I know. I hate seagulls.
But look, it's a great constituency.
Yeah.
And I went there by design. I didn't go there. I'd only been there once in my life when my father bought a fishing boat, which is one of his harebrained schemes, and we all went up to Hartlepool to come down to the East Coast. And it was so rough, we had to put into Great Yarmouth for the night. So that was the only time I'd been to Great Yarmouth before.
Right.
But look, I love it. I love going there. I mean, it's a great place. And the people are still basically the bedrock of this country. And that's what we need. The bedrock's still there, Carl. I think in the countryside. But Labour are trying to do all the things to damage the countryside. That's why we're doing a countryside paper. So, you know, they've damaged the farmers.
They've
damaged small businesses. They're trying to stop trail hunting, for goodness sake. They're trying to cause problems for people with shotguns.
Yeah.
Next, it'll be people who fish.
Yeah.
I mean, why can't they just leave people alone to live their lives and pursue what they want to pursue? But they can't. Because what they are is petty-minded bureaucrats who think they can control everything. And let me tell you, they make bad decisions every time and then try and cover them up. So let's just look at it. COVID, bad decision-making. Hugely bad decision-making. Post office, hugely bad decision-making. I mean, look, I can go on and on with the bad decision-makings of the state, from thalidomide to just about everything. You know, and very often at the root of it is corruption. It's money. Mm. It's people basically being paid in government to promote things that are wrong.
I think it's more than that.
So let's cleanse Britain. Let's get real people back into politics. People who actually don't need the money, but actually care about their communities. That's got to be the model. And Great Yarmouth, I think, that's why I think they're going to come for me, because we've proved the model. And by God, did we do well.
Mm.
10 out of 10.
Haven't missed
one yet, Carl.
I know. Like, very few parties have 100% success record. And this, honestly, this is what we're finding is there are.
And by the way, between you and I, we have people approach us who want to defect already.
I don't doubt. You want to be careful about those defections.
We're going to be very careful. We posted about it.
Yeah, because as you said, a lot of it is people are sick of the old guard.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't like...
Yeah.
I think this has been a mistake that Farage has actually made, is taking on a bunch of Tories. Like, why have you done this?
All he needs is Boris. He's got the old cabinet back.
But what... There are lots of dispossessed, regular British people who are just waiting. They're just waiting to be activated. They're waiting for something. And we're finding them in Swindon right now. And they're coming to us and saying, thank God, we thought it was over. And think how despondent that is. We thought.
Do you think those are the 41% who are coming back?
Yes.
Who are excited. They're people who haven't voted for a long time, have they?
Yeah, if ever, because they look at the political system, they look at the parties and go, no, these are all people who are in it for themselves. You see Farage talking about money all the time. It's like, you make more than $1 million a year. How can you be short on money for a start? But is that really the thing?
He makes loads of money.
He makes loads of money.
He doesn't disclose it all, but he makes lots of it.
Yeah, but he's the highest earning parliamentarian and he's obsessed with money. It's like, okay, how is this the case?
He doesn't give his salary to charity, does he?
Well, no, I don't think he does. But the point being is, like, you've got almost half the electorate who are just checked out and who just do not think that there's a future. And they think the country's over already. And when we're going to them, we're getting the same thing over and over. Oh, it's not too late. We can do this. And the response has been magnificent.
But it won't be easy.
No,
it's so let's not fool people. It's not going to be easy with being, you know, withdrawing this ridiculous welfare and making people actually participate and work. It's not going to be easy. It's like, you know, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
But I think, and it's a bit like Brexit. And again, you watch Starmer trying to take us back into Europe. That's not what the British people voted for in 2016. And when he says Brexit hasn't worked, it only hasn't worked because they haven't delivered Brexit. So we know that this is all palpable rubbish. But the point is, I think there is a glimmer of hope now, but it's not going to be easy. And I don't want people to think that it's going to be one big party. What I am saying to people, you're not racist. Britain's the least racist country in the world. We've got the most decent people. We've got the best people. You know, I was looking at Faraday the other day. You know, Faraday, unbelievable man. Newton, unbelievable man. You know, most of the greatest people have come from this country. And they're still coming from this country. You know, look at Arm and look at all the other companies. Our companies all get bought by other people throughout the world. So what we've got to do is believe in ourselves. We've got to roll back the state. And our economic paper is going to show how we can roll back the state and at the same time cut taxes. Not the Liz Truss, let's just, because she had the right idea, but she couldn't justify it, and therefore they hunted her down unfairly. It wasn't her fault that gilt yields were going up. They've gone up again today because of the public sector borrowing requirement. But the point is, we can do it if we just restore common sense. So, and we remove the state from the entire equation and we stop other people spending other people's money.
So the question, I think a lot of people, especially young people on the left, who are on the left primarily for economic reasons, I think one question they'll put to you is say, okay, well, I am okay with the idea of less state spending, but I'm worried about what I suppose they could call international predatory capital. As you said, they buy a foreign companies and governments are buying up our infrastructure and corporations.
But this is why it's so important to restore our financial markets, because before Blair, our financial markets were incredibly powerful. So you had people coming to London to raise money. But what happens when you undermine risk-taking, which is what's happened? So this is what the regulators have done. I mean, financial markets, Carl, are built on risk-taking.
Yeah.
That is how you get rich. But you don't get rich it's all in the Bible. It's all in the Bible. By burying your coin and digging it up, you don't get rich. What you've got to do is you've got to be prepared to invest it and take risk. And what you have to then therefore do is empower people and reward them. And as Lincoln said, this is Abraham Lincoln, you don't make the poor richer by making the rich poorer. And this is the sort of malign logic that Labour employs to try and say, oh, she's got money, or that's not fair. Well, it is fair. It is fair if people have taken risk and they've employed a lot of people and they deserve the reward and they deserve to be able to, if they want to give it to charity, which is what used to happen a lot with the friendly societies, they should be allowed to do that. If they want to leave it to their children, they should be allowed to do that.
Of course, but I
if
think-
they want to endow an Oxford College, they should be allowed to do that.
Yeah.
The last thing we want is some committee of half-witted idiots taking the money off the British people
and then deciding
where it should be spent.
But I think people will say, well, what about things like BlackRock? In the last interview we did, you said you didn't want BlackRock owning half the country.
I think BlackRock is probably, again, it's a huge enterprise now.
But
again, what's happened, I think, and I've covered this to some extent in Parliament with quantitative easing. You see, I think what happens is if you become dishonest with your money, people then become dishonest. And what happens is the biggest people who are most dishonest thrive.
So
if you have a society that's based on proper economics, proper Austrian school economics, What happens is those people who are enterprising get rewarded, not those people who feed off the back of printed money and dishonesty.
And
what
I agree.
Happens, that's why I'm implacably opposed to bailouts.
Yes.
And
yes,
since I've been in the city, I've seen bailout after bailout after bailout. Yeah. And all you do is protect failure.
Yes.
And you propagate failure.
Yes. And I agree with Hayek's
true capitalism, as you know, however big it is, let it fail. Because there'll always be people who are more able who will pick up the pieces and then make it work. But if you prop it up by mutualizing the loss across the entire electorate,
yes,
all you do is make the bigger crooks bigger and bigger.
And I completely agree with you.
So that's your answer. I mean, that's.
But well, the thing is, though, I'm not sure that'll be satisfying to these young people who see the system as because what you're saying, which I completely agree with, is something that needs to come into existence. It doesn't currently exist. But what they're looking at is what does currently exist and saying, well, BlackRock is, for example, working hand in glove with Keir Starmer to ruin our farmers so they can purchase up our farms.
Probably. I can't prove it, but probably.
Well, exactly.
Businesses as well.
Absolutely.
And we don't want our businesses sold.
Well, exactly.
The backbone of Britain was our farms and our businesses.
So what?
Families, communities, and actually it all makes sense.
So
if you ask most people who work for family business,
yeah.
Would you rather work for somebody you know,
or
do you want to work for a faceless corporation where you get an answer from HR that computer says no?
I mean, whereas the answer is straightforward.
If you know the guy who owns it, you can go and say, now listen, cock, you know, you've got this wrong.
Yeah.
Most of the time, he'll listen to you.
Of course.
Because if he doesn't listen to you, it costs him money.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, I know.
But if you've got a committee of people who don't own their company, who are pork-barreling a living on the back of shareholders, and a lot of this is faceless capital now. So a lot of the problems come from the fact that our pension funds have got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And our pension funds control these pools of capital, which in my view are often dishonest in that they then mop up a lot of private businesses that think long-term and deliver long-term.
True. But what I'm saying is a lot of people will want to hear what is the Restore Britain policy to prevent BlackRock from buying up our farms.
Well, first of all, you scrap IHT, which means that our farms don't have to be sold.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously.
But if you force people, it's like small businesses. I've got small businesses. Am I going to invest lots of money long-term in those businesses, knowing that every penny I invest, if I die, and I'm 68 now, you know, who knows? I mean, the Bible said you had 3 score years and 10, but, you know, hopefully I'm going to have a bit more than that. Mm. But at the end of the day, if somebody dies now and has to pay 20% IHT on a business they've built up, which employs lots of people, or a farm that they've been in their family for years. And by the way, farming is not a sort of nirvana of riches.
I mean,
people are leaving farming every day, Carl, and that's really serious because you can't make money as a contractor. You can't make money as a landowner.
But listen, this is
so important. So for young people, what we have to do is create an environment where they have an opportunity. And actually, they have almost more opportunity if they're given a chance, because they're very bright, a lot of them.
Yes.
And with the digital revolution, there's never been an opportunity to make more money more quickly than now. Mm. And you're going to see it with AI. You're going to see it in the law, because the lawyers are going to get wiped out, because you can AI everything in law. You're going to see it in accountancy, because you can AI everything in accountancy. And do you know what? I'm with the blue-collar workers. I'm with the people who actually do things. And I read a plumber saying the other day, I'm thinking of leaving the country. If we all leave the country, all those other people won't get anything done because they don't know how to do it. We know how to do it. Well, I'm with him. He's right.
Yeah, he's absolutely
right. So what we've got to do is release those people and encourage people to actually get involved in the economy. Because I'll tell you, the way you make money is if you're involved in the economy, opportunity comes over you.
I completely agree.
Opportunity never comes if you sit with a clean sheet of paper and say, I'm going to make money. How am I going to do it? Well, here's a clean sheet of paper. Yeah. No. What happens is Carl or Rupert are busy doing their business and suddenly you see an opportunity. Oh, there's an opportunity there. Bang. And that's entrepreneurialism.
Yes.
But that is individuals. That's not the state. For Christ's sake, how many times do we have to look at the USSR as a model of complete central planning failure? Mm. How many times do we have to watch Mao as a center of complete human failure? The EU is the same, Carl. But why Starmer wants to go back to the EU, mate, is quite simply, the EU was based on a monopoly. Mm. It was founded on post-war socialist philosophy. It's a socialist construct. Mm. But in order to pursue its evil aims, it had to destroy proud nation states like Britain, which it's done by creating five regions, different regional parliaments, stirring up all the old hatreds which we put behind us with the Act of Union in 1707. Mm. So their agenda was malign, and they couldn't do it politically. So they tried in 97 to do it by ramming us all together financially, which is why I stood for the referendum party. Mm. Now, we defeated that. And then in 2016, the British people said, no, we don't want to be part of that. We're happy to be part of a cooperating nation states with Europe, but we don't want that.
Yes.
And that's going to fail, by the way, because that is the equivalent of the USSR.
Yes.
Their economies are failing. Yep. They are basically a malign influence. And look at the way they're destroying themselves with their open borders and their DEI and their malign philosophies, which are all emanating from, you know, as I say, people who are abusing the system, pork barreling living, and robbing the 500 million plus citizens they're supposed to be serving in Europe.
Oh, yeah. So before we end quickly then, what's next for Restore Britain?
Right. Well, Restore Britain, our policy. Hmm. So I want to produce policy documents that people can read so they can see how we think Britain needs to be restored, and they can look at them like they can, and they can try and understand, they can critique them. I don't mind if they make criticisms of them, but we have to start somewhere and we have to put in philosophy. Now, I think from my time in business, my time in the city, my time generally doing lots of different things, I think we've got the constituent parts of how we put it together. So as I say, get oil and energy and net zero are incredibly important. Mm. Getting the economy right is incredibly important. There are several building blocks. Borders and defense is incredibly important. So we're going to put these bedrock papers together. At the same time, Carl, you've got a huge role to play. You've got to build up, restore Swindon branch.
Doing my best.
And we've got to have other people coming forward, hopefully, now. I mean, it's a huge job for us, but so I want people to take responsibility for their own branches. I want them to make decisions. That's how you run businesses. You don't run businesses with some little Napoleon the pig sitting at the top of the pile saying, you know, do as I say, not as I do. Because most of the time, people who tell you what to do don't do what they tell you to do. They do exactly the opposite and indulge themselves. So I want devolved power. I want people taking control of their branches. From there, we can win local elections. And then I think, and I'm hopeful, that we won't have a general election yet. I saw somebody saying that Starmer might, you know, hold the card of an early election over the Labour Party. And as you know, there's a lot of people in the Labour Party who earn close to £100,000 for being an MP.
And
at the moment, they've got
seats.
3 years left. Yeah. If Keir Starmer calls an election, how many of them are going to be re-elected?
It'll be in the dozens.
So do they want an early election?
No.
So, as I always say, watch what the hands are doing, not what the mouth is saying. And I suspect the five golden rules of business, which is what's in it for me, says they won't want an early election because they're going to lose it. They're going to get decimated. Yeah. There's nobody to take over from Starmer. I mean, Rayner, you can't have Rayner. She's lied about her principal dwelling residence. She's lied about her tax. She's arguably overvalued a house and put it into her son's trust, which I think is personally criminal.
Also, I just don't think she's very competent.
No, she's just a sort of loudmouth, very dishonest person.
It's worth streeting then, surely.
But again, you know, look at Mandelson. Why isn't Mandelson in prison? You know, you've got Lucy Connolly goes to prison for a social media tweet. Peter Mandelson leaves a cabinet meeting, we now know, and he leaks crucial information to Jeffrey Epstein. It's all there. It took a public outcry before he was even arrested.
Yeah.
But now he's back at home.
Yeah, drinking, he lives in Wiltshire.
Drinking Lafitte and eating, you know, in whatever restaurant he feels like eating in. So we have got two-tier. And these people, the reason he was picked, Carl, is quite simple. It was an appalling selection. And I talked about it in Parliament at the time. It was completely illogical. You know, the guy has got a trail of financial sort of misfeasance.
I mean, it's Peter Mandelson.
Trump had called him a moron. He'd been rude about Trump.
Yeah.
Tell me why he is the guardian appointed to be the guardian of our most important relationship. And by the way, I'd love to know what happened to Morgan McSweeney's phone, because I suspect it's nestling at the bottom of the Thames, probably.
Just happened to go missing.
But look, so
Well, I've got a question.
I think it's really exciting. And what we've got to do now is stay calm. Mm-hmm. Just keep doing what we're doing because it's working. And I think people should look at the model in Great Yarmouth. Talk to my team. We know what you need to do. We are supporting you as much as we can. We're not hugely rich. We haven't had a £5 million donation or anything like that. No. But we've got members. And by the way, people who support what we're doing do need to sign up. Mm-hmm. 20 quid. Don't tell me everybody can't afford 20 quid.
Yeah.
But that's not the point. The point is we do need money to get the branches going, but we need to show the political establishment that people believe in what we're doing. And so that's why the membership numbers count so much.
In I understand there are more local elections in 2027. Are you going to be standing in them?
I think if we're ready, we will. Yeah. I mean, I think the model is we've proved the model, and if people can get their branches up and running and get their tentacles across the local community, the local part comes first. Mm. And then, I mean, I think the election on balance of probability will be in 28 or 29. I don't know who's going to stand against Starmer. Somebody will emerge. As you know, they're all sort of weasels and cowards and nobody breaks cover. And as they say, he who wields the dagger is seldom the one who's appointed. So they're all hanging back, but there's a sort of very febrile.
Oh, I mean local elections next year.
Of course,
local elections.
So we've got to start winning local elections.
Yeah.
As they come.
Restore will be standing candidates in.
I'm not saying we will. Where we're ready, we will stand. Okay. But hopefully, people will get themselves ready now. They've seen what we've done. Mm. We didn't have long to prepare for it, but we did. And you know, the reason we used Great Yarmouth first is quite straightforward. In the end, I think it was a great name.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's part of Restore Britain. And, you know, we did it because we weren't sure we'd get Electoral Commission approval for Restore Britain in time. But we knew we'd get it for Great Yarmouth first. Right. And then when we got it for Great Yarmouth first, we then subsequently got it for Restore Britain. But in fact, not in time to stand as Restore Britain. But in the event, I think we did well standing as Great Yarmouth first. And I'm incredibly proud of my constituency. I what a bedrock to build this on.
Thanks so much.
Couldn't be a better foundation, could there?
No, thank you so much for joining me. It's been great.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.